Hey, Jason, stand up. Jason Cruz, University of Florida. Joe Crum, was with University of Georgia and now is with True Green in Memphis. My wife dug this little thing up and the other day, and we're going to have a bunch of historic dates in 2011. It's kind of interesting. 1-1-11, 1-11-11, 11-1-11, 11-11-11. I'm having a hard time saying that. We're also going to have 5 Saturdays, 5 Sundays, and 5 Mondays this month. That happens about once every 823 years. Okay. On your birthday, this year, the last two numbers in your birthday plus your age will equal 111. Think about it. It does. It really works. You equal 111. And I'm looking around here, I'm thinking, I think I might be the only one in this room whose age is older than his birthday. But I'm looking at it like, well, if I'm going to live to 111, I'm only slightly over halfway there, so doing pretty good. I'm going to throw you a little bit of curve here today. Joe was not supposed to be here. He wasn't sure if he was going to be able to make it. And Joe has been very active in some of the most recent work in precision turfgrass management. So I'm going to turn this over to Joe for about the final 10 minutes. So I'm going to try and keep my presentation within 20 minutes. I don't think that's going to work. My wife came down with me for the first time to one of these meetings. We've been down here since Friday. And I've been throwing slides out of this presentation ever since, trying to get it under an hour. So I hope I can manage that. We have a total of 149 citations in this particular monograph chapter. A lot of them happen to come out of crop science or crop production. I'm afraid to say that crop production is so far ahead of us in precision agriculture that it's kind of embarrassing. And we need to catch up. Okay. So we have to do, and the reviewer says, there's too many crop production references in here. Well, the others don't exist. When John came to me and he said, you want to do a chapter with Jason Cruz on site-specific management, he called it site-specific management, I said, Jason? I said, okay, you must be talking about spectral sensing, right? Well, yeah, that and site-specific management. And I'm thinking, there is no such thing. We don't have, well, you know, Larry Stoll and Wendy Glartner had done some work and published it in Golf Course Management. Was it Golf Course Management, Larry? Yeah. But we didn't have any refereed journal papers. None. But I knew there was some work going on in Georgia. Thank goodness Toro has decided to support this effort. And Bob Carroll, actually, I might be standing up here pretending that I'm the expert in this area, but Bob actually has done more work in this area than I have. So there is some precision turfgrass management going on. There just isn't very much. Okay. However, there are 54 references in spectral sensing. Now, that may surprise you. We need to move on. We're doing the same things over and over and over again. Little twist here, little twist there. It's time to put these sensors out there and get them working. Let's find out what they can do out in the field. We don't need to test them anymore. I don't need to look at a paper I got coming in on my desk for review, look at the objectives, and know exactly what the results are going to be. Because I did that work a dozen years ago. Because Lori Trenholm did it 15 years ago. We need to move on. Precision turfgrass management requires a division of complex spatial areas into more simple management units. These units are then assigned inputs based on specific need. Precision turfgrass management provides more efficient use of resources compared with more general management techniques. And what we don't know yet is we might even be able to do some good with precision turfgrass management as far as making better turf. But we need to get out there and find out. One of the things that I realized when we were writing this chapter, was my definition of precision turfgrass management is not the same as everyone else's. A couple of the reviewers made the comment that we need to spend a little less time on spectral sensing and a little bit more time on precision turfgrass management. Well, like I said, there isn't any, at least to my way of thinking. So maybe we need to define that a little bit better. Maybe my definition is a little bit too narrow. I'm looking at a definition that I'm thinking that it has to include GIS in some respect, and it has to include a management plan. Otherwise, it's not precision turfgrass management. But if I take a hose out here on a golf course green, and I look at that golf course green, determine which spots need to be... Yeah, it doesn't work, John. Determine which of those spots actually needs to be watered and go do it. That's site-specific management. If I want to make it precise, maybe I can take a soil probe out there. I can keep a record of it. That's all precision turfgrass management. I can throw a sensor on my shoulder, make a map. Or, you know, I can use an aerial photograph. Or better yet, I can use that John Deere piece of equipment that's sitting up there with a sensor array on it and make the map that you see down there in the lower right-hand corner. Or better yet, I can use the Toro machine that you see, because the Toro machine has a spectral sensing device as well as a soil probe, and we can make two maps. So that to me is precision turfgrass management. But we can make it a lot wider, a lot broader, if we want to. Okay. To date, the procedure that has received the most attention for the implementation of site-specific management in turfgrass has been spectral reflectance sensing. The term spectral reflectance sensing is usually shortened to reflectance sensing and is often called optical sensing and sometimes remote sensing. You'll see all those terms in the monograph. And the reason is because I started out using the term optical sensing, decided that spectral reflectance sensing was a more useful term and more descriptive, and Jason likes remote sensing. So it's all in there, but it's all pretty much the same thing. So let's talk a little bit about how we're going to use this equipment for precision turfgrass management. People have been asking me for years, you know, what does this stuff measure? Well, I've been hedging for all those years, not wanting to make a mistake, but I know what it measures. It measures biomass, and that might be mowing height, live cover, or density. All three of those things affect it. It's tissue water level. It measures that. It measures plant nutrition. It's affected by plant nutrition and obviously damage. Anytime you do a map, you can see every little bit of damage, whether it's insect damage, traffic damage, drought damage, you'll see it. One thing it doesn't do is tell you what caused that damage. It doesn't tell you whether that plant is stressed because it's losing water or because it needs nitrogen. You have to make those decisions. It's just a dumb, simple little unit. But for the, in that respect, it's very consistent. It does a lot of things that we could never do before. But it doesn't make decisions. You have to go out there and make the decisions for it. What it does do is it responds to the reflectance that is encouraged in the NIR band, not by pigments, but by cellular structure. So if you're looking for something that's going to measure water rather than nitrogen content, you're going to have to look out there. As the cellular structure starts to decline, then the reflectance in the NIR also starts to decline. The pigments are what affect it in the PAR, in the photosynthetically active radiation area, okay, including green. And, you know, eventually we're going to have to wrap our heads around the fact that as the grass gets greener, it actually absorbs more green light. I have a hard time with that. That's not what I learned. What I learned was green is reflected. It's not photosynthetically active. Well, it is. More of it is absorbed than is reflected. That's how green NDVI works. That's how G over NIR works. Okay. We can make maps like this. These maps were made in 1999. Okay. We've been able to do this for a very long time. And you can do these at very high resolution. These, what you're looking at here, are site-specific management areas in hundreds of square feet. This lends itself a lot better to irrigation management than it does for something like fertilizer management. Fertilizer management, you need something that's a little, has a little higher resolution. Because it's not easy to separate the two, you have to use your intelligence to do it. Okay. So we just use this little map on the right here, and we kind of haphazardly determined that we were going to irrigate at different rates. And we used that as a display. Okay. So we're out there giving this to people like, or companies like John Deere, because we had a close relationship with John Deere at one time. And they didn't want to pay any attention to it. And we did it with Entech. They didn't want to pay any attention to it. And we were supposed to have an agreement with them. Well, those things never seemed to work out. I needed a manufacturer that sold red equipment, actually. And that didn't work out either, because my university didn't like that much. They wanted the relationship with John Deere. We always look to do precision turf grass management, is what we called it, for fertilizer. And we wanted a sprayer that would sense and spray on the go. So our sprayers would divide units up into much smaller areas than what you just saw and spray at sub-meter levels at seven different rates. It was quite a neat little design. We started out with something like you see up there, the Cherokee up in the upper left-hand corner. That has an 80-foot boom. Okay, each one of those sensors on that boom send a prescription for the nozzle array underneath. So it can spray at seven different rates for each one of those nozzles across an 80-foot boom. Well, that's really difficult to control. The engineers had a terrible time. But it was much easier on ours. We started out with the John Deere over there on the right in 1998. That had weed seeker sensors on it. And that was the first active commercially available sensor. And it worked very well, but it wasn't electronically sound. So we ended up going with a Green Seeker and making it a little bit better. The engineers at Oklahoma State developed the Green Seeker. We put it on that Kawasaki mule down there in the left-hand corner. That worked excellent. And what we're showing there is, you notice that some of those sensors are out over that driveway. Well, they don't spray out there. As soon as it sees yellow turf, or it sees gravel, or it sees a cart path, it shuts the sprayers down, shuts the nozzles down. On the inside, we've got some higher mown zoysia grass that is being sprayed at seven different rates, and some creeping bank grass that's being sprayed at seven different rates. The machine on the right-hand side was the version that was going to take this into industry, and it worked exceptionally well. The problem with it was, by the time we got all the bugs worked out of it, the controller went down, and the only one that could fix it had retired. So I got disgusted and packed up my tent, and that is now a utility vehicle. It can also sense diseases. You can see the disease on the left is what you would normally see with your eye. On your right, that's what the sensor sees. So these are in it would be 1 foot, 30 centimeter increments. This is a weed seeker. And as it, you see that from the darkness in a lot of those slides, and this is a little mishmash because it didn't come out the way it was on the original slide. But you can tell that it's looking at that dollar spot in the creeping bentgrass. It can spray that site specifically. Problem is, does it work? If we only spray the damaged turf, is that going to be effective? That's something that we need to know. It will also spray weeds. The block there is a diagram of a Bermuda grass cultivar test. Now, it will pick up different cultivars. It will do that easily. So it has no problem picking up green weeds in green turf. The problem is not sensitivity. The problem is resolution. Let me show you what I mean. If you take a dandelion like this, a little dandelion, and this one happens to be about 5 centimeters across in its core area, okay? Let's take a look and see. This is what the green seeker sees. Now, I happen to know more about the green seeker than any other sensor, so we're going to use it. Many of them have different patterns, okay? This one has a pattern that's 0.1 centimeters in the direction of travel, and it's 61 centimeters wide for a total area of 6.1 centimeters squared. Now, I can't even get at this scale, I can't even get that the width of that pattern on the slide. But 92% of that frame is covered by green Bermuda grass. Only 8% of that frame is weed. So the sensor doesn't see it. It can't see it. All of that weed is averaged in with the Bermuda grass. You need a better resolution in order to do that. So let's try this. We can divide those up into 6.1 centimeter squared areas, which would be about 2.8 centimeter round. No matter where that sensor passed or those sensors passed, well over half of that weed would be in that frame, and the sensor would see it. Now we've got a system that works. The problem is, where we had one sensor that covered a 2-foot area, now we need 22. And that's far too expensive and far too inefficient. So there was some work going on with lasers. They had pulsing lasers where the laser would pulse across the sensor. And so every time that laser hit the ground, it took a different reading. And it did it so fast you couldn't even see it. Well, there was some work going on there, and I haven't heard of it since, but that would have taken care of that problem. And I don't know if that's still going to be accomplished or not. And this is my last slide. And what I'll say is there are things that we can do with these that we could never do before with visual evaluation. And I'm not going to stand here and tell you that visual evaluation is no good. Visual evaluation is the one that we will continue to use far into the future. It's flexible. But there are things you can do with this sensor, like you can do the same thing in Idaho that you can do in Florida. That sensor will see the same thing in both locations. You can get many, many different people using that sensor without any training whatsoever, other than pushing a button. It's faster for some things, and it can do things like this. If we want to take, this is Dr. Shong's work, actually, and Dr. Moss's work when they were both my PhD students. One of them was working on Bermuda grass and one on bent grass. And so these are 2 years' work of each one. And the x-axis works from day 80 of the year all the way out through day 300. That's about late March through, I think, late October. The red is Bermuda grass. The blue is creeping bent grass. On the upper graph, the y-axis is MDVI. On the lower graph, the y-axis is visual rating. You'll notice that the visual rating does not always match the NDVI. That's because it's done on a comparison basis. Okay? You always have to have a comparison to be made. If you're in the middle of the summer, and we all know this, that grass is going to look different than it did in the spring. But we could never have a quantitative measure of that before. So Gertal and Shaw were the first ones to report that back in 2004. And we've done a lot of work along this line trying to come up with algorithms that we could spray with. Okay. Well, it always comes up with a pattern very similar to what you see in that upper graph. Okay. And that's what actually the pattern that the turf grass goes through during the season. And now I'd like to turn things over to Joe.
All right, thank you, Greg, and good morning. I just want to finish up this presentation, this talk on the chapter, talking about some recent advancements in PTM, precision turfgrass management, and where we're headed. So, you know, PTM in a nutshell, I'm going backwards, is, you know, trying to apply inputs only where, when, and in the amount needed by the plant. So we already do this to an extent in the industry. We've been doing it for years, treating a green differently from a rough on a golf course application, or treating an athletic field that's high in sand content versus an athletic field high in clay content differently as well, with inputs, water, fertility, and so on. But, you know, where we're headed is to a greater degree of precision in our input management. And some of the reasons for this is there's increased expectations by golf course members, by athletic field managers, by a lot of, you know, people in the industry, and some for very good reasons, because of the increases in the advancements in our research and some of the irrigation system technology that has advanced in its capabilities in recent years. You know, a golf course member watches the Masters in April and then goes to the golf course superintendent and says, why can't our course look like this all the time? And obviously that's not feasible, but the expectations are there. So also we have a lot more restrictions coming in, in terms of water management, resource management, in terms of other inputs, fertilizers, et cetera. And you talk about the state, for instance, the highest temperatures on record, and the largest degree of drought stress ever experienced on record this year. So we're seeing increased regulations. And do we want these regulations to be science-based, or do we want them to be broad-brushed, holistic, and not based on data and not based in science? So regulations are another reason why we're moving toward a greater degree of precision in our input management. And also player safety. PTM has its applications to player safety, creating more uniform turf environments, athletic fields. And so there's another application. Also, we're always trying to do more with less in terms of labor, budget. So those are all applications, reasons why we're doing this work to move to a greater degree of precision. So, you know, to do this, we need to create more efficiency in our input management. We need to be more precise in our input application, and for that to happen, we need more information. We need more site-specific information, and that's what the mobile sensor technology that we've worked with the last several years is giving us the capability of handling more information, quantifying it, and hopefully applying it in the real-world situations. So some of the work that was done, you know, early on, I mean, well, first off, we're looking at some variability based on soil, texture, organic matter, pH. You know, we have variability there below the ground. And then above the ground, with soil texture, shade, wind speed, humidity, temperature, irrigation system, all those factors lead to more spatial variability and why we need to manage the sites in a more efficient way. So one of the studies that was done in 2006 was at the soil. It was at the Old Collier Golf Club in Naples, Florida, and that was based on seashore past paddle and turf. And one of the objectives of that was to look at NDVI water content compaction during the course of dry downs using GPS and GIS technology. So this is one of the field studies that occurred, and there's been a lot of other field studies that have happened in recent years. So after we take the measurements, after we analyze the data, these are some of the maps that are produced. And some of the problems that we find is in maybe a recessed head or improper irrigation coverage. So these are things that can be identified. These are some of the applications for the maps that are produced. And beyond soil moisture assessment and reflectance and soil penetrometer resistance or compaction measurements, we look at salinity measurements using the four-winter array method, looking at electrical conductivity. And this was one of the prototype units developed in 2008 by the University of Georgia. And similar to the spatial maps that I showed a couple slides before, these are some EC maps. And if you look at the smaller map in between, that's water content, and there's a direct relationship between EC and moisture content on a saline site such as this. And other applications, for athletic fields, you have spectral reflectance here on baseball fields and soccer fields. This was some work done up in Minnesota, and one was the first map was taken in July, and the second map, the data was taken in September of 2007. You can see some of the differences between those two dates. Also, when you look at water content and compaction, those are just some of the maps that are developed with this technology. So some of the recent advancements, a lot of work has been done between Toro and the University of Georgia, Dr. Bob Carroll, on some of the recent advancements the last couple of years since the writing of this chapter. So with SSMU identification, this is the unit that has been used by Toro. This is the most recent version of the Toro mobile multisensor, as it is referred to in the chapter. Now it's called the Toro Precision Sense 6000, and you can see it has two NDVI sensors along with a moisture sensor and salinity sensor using the probes you can see there, the TDR probes, and also measures compaction. And this is takes very intensive measurements in terms of spacing. It's about 2.5 by 2.5 meters grid spacing of what you get with your salinity and soil moisture measurements. And development of SSMUs, it's really based on irrigation scheduling. We want to identify different SSMUs based on the maps, and each color, essentially in this example, represents a different irrigation schedule for the golf course application in this example, or for athletic fields or other applications. So that's one area where we're moving toward is getting these SSMUs identified and then basing our irrigation schedule off them, and not just looking at a particular fairway and managing it in one way, but looking at different sections, identifying different areas where inputs are needed in different amounts. And that's what's shown right here. So the other application that is being worked on extensively with Toro and Dr. Carroll there at Georgia is a new water out approach as opposed to the traditional catch can method. They're going to use the Toro Precision Sense to have a new water audit approach that takes the Toro Precision Sense 6000 and maps and uses the data that's gained from that application. So this is just an example of an athletic field and the distribution uniformity that you might find during a water audit. And, without uniformity, there's no efficient water use. The irrigation scheduling methods are limited usefulness. Soil leaching is relatively ineffective. It can be without proper adjustments to the irrigation system and utilizing its capability to its maximum. So with field testing, more and more of that is going on to to apply that in real-world situations to a whole area, like a whole fairway, down to the precision of an individual sprinkler head. So I do problems with the heads and also with head space. And so, again, the total precision sense is being used to develop a new water added approach. And the main obstacle that's being overcome is integrating all of the data in a streamlined approach to give to the end user so it can be used effectively and without minimum time required to analyze the data, interpret the data. That needs to all be done before it's given to the end user, to the golf course superintendent or whoever else may be interested in the data, whoever else is having the water audit conducted. So it's all about developing it and delivering the information in a decision support format. So some field applications I just talked about, the new water audit approach, increasing conservation efficiency, salinity mapping, site-specific cultivation, looking at player safety applications, and also for other applications like grass racetracks, for example. So that's all I have. Are there any questions?
Any questions for Greg or Joe?
I know there's some certain error with the GPS's spatial resolution. Sometimes it's 6 feet, give or take. It doesn't really know. Does the software kind of account for that?
The question was, does the software account for a lot of the error that you may see in some of the sensor? Are you referring to the